Ron Rappetal on the mic here, and I'm very, very happy that I was able to interview Mike Montoya, the CEO and founder of Stronger Consulting, and in full transparency, my boss. I always wanted to have an interview with Mike to just get to know him more deeply. If you know anything about Mike, good people, good human, and it takes a little while to open up, and I feel very grateful he opened up a bit with me in our conversation. So he shared his experiences growing up in a conservative environment and discovering his identity as a gay man. And then we discussed the challenges he faced and the role that youth development programs played in his healing process. He then went from working at the Broad Center to starting his own consulting firm, Stronger Consulting, and how his identity as a person of color and a member of the LGBTQ+ community has shaped his entrepreneurial journey. Check out this episode, fam. And we are sponsored by Leverage Publishing Group. We ghostwrite and publish first-time authors in 9 months without the use of AI. Peace. Ron Durings, fam. Feels like it's been a minute because I haven't recorded episodes in a little bit, but y'all wouldn't know that because they just keep coming weekly, right? But I wanted to bring friend, technically my boss too at Stronger Consulting, where I've been at since early January. He's a friend from the world of education, leaders of color, my buddy, Mike Montoya. Mike's on the mic. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, it's great to spend time with you, Ron. Appreciate it. It's exciting. I've been watching this for a while or listening, bro. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on here too. So, Mike, why don't we just jump in? What is your story?
The story. We don't have 4 hours, right? So we're going to do it in less time.
I just have to bring you back. You can do the extended remix at some point with me, but no,
the longer version. Obviously, I get that question a lot from the clients. Like, it edifies you, right, when you tell some of your personal story. And I learned a lot about, like, how do you just share about yourself and, you know, helps people to feel connected, right? So that's been practiced over the years to do that effectively. And so I'll try to do that in a brief but effective way. And I think the longer the short of it is that, you know, I grew up in Colorado and in the 70s and 80s, like, so dating myself a tiny bit, right? But, like, before social media, before the internet, all that stuff, you know, I got out of high school in 1990. So that just gives people a picture of that. We used to still do typewriters and things like that in high school. So,
yeah.
And, you know, my family of origin, as I've come to think about it, right, has roots in Mexico and Spain and a little bit of Irish in there. And I think we're mostly Catholic. That's how we ended up together as a family, right? I think it's a very common thing for people to intermarry inside the religion when I was young or before I was young, before I was born. So that's kind of how I got here. And it took a long time for me to figure out my kind of my personal identity, right, over time, because I think I was probably 10 or 11 when I figured out that I was not a straight kid, right? My dad used to say, like, hey, stay straight when you get older. And I never understood that, like, in the context of my own experience, because as a gay kid, I didn't have a voice really. And that was, like, super stress creating when I was a kid. Because there was like, I grew up in Colorado Springs. And if anybody knows anything about Colorado Springs, it was beautiful. It's amazing country and amazing space and beauty. But it also at the time was, like, ultra conservative and still is pretty conservative place. And a lot of military groups. And I think when I was a kid, there was, like, a big push to bring the evangelical movement to Colorado because of tax incentives and things like that. So it got more and more hostile as I got to middle school and high school. And again, before the internet, there was, like, no touch points outside of that kind of isolated space. So that was stressful and challenging. And part of the reason I got into the career I got into with kids in schools is because I had all these, like, people that I called them, like, adults outside of my family that kind of kept me from going insane, literally. And it allowed me to be, I don't know, myself in safe spaces, et cetera. Even if I didn't understand that all at the time, it did make a lot of sense for me to be like, hey, around individuals who loved and cared about kids and they cared about me. And that made it possible for me to struggle through, right, in that regard. So That's the childhood experience. I have a sister. She's a couple years older. We call ourselves survivors. I have this little sticker next to my desk. It's called Yay Survivors, which I got because we kind of got through a crazy family a loving family, but also difficult in some ways. And, you know, I think we're successful as adults because we got into good educational experiences, federal grants, and all sorts of scholarships to go to private schools, which were, you know, like the ticket out of that space. And so that was super challenging. I went to college and I was like, oh, my shit, way over my head, right? Like, it was like,
yeah,
there's all these kids that know all this stuff and had been much more highly rigorous, right, than I was. And so that was a challenge, for sure. But I think, you know, like, if you survive it, it's supposed to make you stronger, I think. But since the name of the company a little bit, right, there's like...
Plug.
Stronger Consulting, don't forget about us. You know, like, you get a little stronger by, you know, building up resilience over time, et cetera. I kind of was in an early career as a youth development guy. And so got really into youth programming and supporting the success of young people through sort of similar things that I did or that I experienced as a kid. And that was kind of, again, my way of giving back.
Yeah.
I think in some ways it's also my way of healing, right? Some of that like pain as a kid, you know.
Mm. Was there a particular youth program, Mike, that you were involved in that was like the thing that like you felt safe as a gay kid, safe to be able to heal?
You know, I don't know if there was like, I mean, I don't think I really understood it until after. I mean, like, I was in the Boy Scouts. That was a huge one. And it wasn't the Boy Scouts in specifically, right? Yes. That was the thing. Because yeah, they were pretty hostile to gay kids.
I was about to say, consider it seen in the media. I'm like,
Wasn't great. It wasn't great until, and I know it's interesting, like, to be part of these institutions. Like, you know, I had a great youth group at my Catholic church. I had a great scout troop, you know, with a bunch of men who were decent men, you know?
Yeah.
And I think also, you know, I had a great experience as an athlete, as a kid, a swimmer, right? As a swimming kid.
I was about to say, Colorado Springs makes all the sense of the world because I have a friend from college who moved out there and like trains Olympic swimmers.
So. Olympic Training Center. Yeah. That was a huge part of our culture and our life. I worked at the training center when I was in college as like an intern and things like that. Like,
oh, wow.
You know, we call it like, you know, free labor, right? They didn't have paid internships back then, but
right,
if you could get a job at an institution like that, then you were kind of on track to do something different, right, with your life. And so that was, that was a cool thing. So it's a number of them, right? No, none of them were like specifically well geared for gayness. I think that just wasn't a thing, right? Nobody talked about it in Colorado Springs at the time. I don't think I figured that out until I was a little older, and then I started to find resources around that. But, you know, that was, you know, I think it's a sign of the times and the location more than anything, right? The world wasn't hostile towards it. But
yeah,
I think a lot of us that grew up in the 80s just didn't have space for that, you know? So interesting question. So,
yeah. So you talked about how getting into youth development yourself was a part of your healing. Talk to our audience a little bit about that.
Yeah. So like, you know, I'm not a big thinker that like there's a single magic bullet for, you know, what makes kids survive, be successful, thrive, right? But I do think like there's a framework, there's a kind of a positive youth development framework that kind of started to come out in the 80s, like the resiliency frameworks and things like that. And those elements, right? Like you're a whole human. You have all these ways of developing as a person. You have to develop your intellect. You have to develop your body and your spirit. You have to develop your emotional components, right? Those are all kind of ways that as you progress through middle school, high school, college, right, that those are features that are still expanding, right, as a human. And so I think I've learned that, like, that's the healthiest framework to grow up in because it allows for all the rest of it, right? It makes space for someone to be a nerdy kid and be very intellectually focused, but also to be an athlete and be very successful there too, right? And so like youth development space gives space for all of that stuff. And so the work that I get to do now is because like I at least make space for all the types of ways that kids are experiencing the world. And so I'm kind of like, I call myself agnostic about the how kids get to healthy spaces in their lives and that they need lots of opportunities, right? And not just a single venue, right? Because every kid's different, you know, I think.
Yeah.
And having been that kid that like was super smart because I had to be, because that was my safety space, right? Because if I was smart, then I was protected. So I had to have straight A's because that's how I shielded myself from some of the hard stuff, right, that was coming at me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, because I wasn't the toughest kid and I had braces and glasses and, you know, kids used to pick on each other. They probably still do for those things, right? You know, so you have to figure out like, how do you navigate all that stuff? And there's a whole navigation framework in the youth development world, right? Which is super useful. So I found a lot of joy in that, to be like, oh, like, here's the thing that I can build a career around this. And now, you know, our work is really about helping kids, you know, to have those opportunities, because you don't know who needs what, because you can't really tell. You know, kids are not totally forthcoming. They don't know themselves yet, right? They're still developing. That's the whole point.
So Mike, I know you've made, obviously you still work in youth development with some of the stuff you do outside of Stronger, but I know that you made a shift in how we started to like come into each other's circles was your time working at the Broad Center. So talk to us about that transition from youth development to Broad. Like what precipitated that? What was that context?
Yeah, that's a great one. It's a good story here. I use the word navigating because it was a word that we brought to Broad. And when I joined Broad, I was like the oddball out there because the Broad Center was like all MBAs all the time, you know?
I remember, yes.
And I think it was funny, a good story. Like, I applied to Broad before they they made a shift at some point, but there was the early stages of the Broad Center, which was like really about bringing adults with high skills into the education space to like lead school organizations, largely charter schools or school districts, right? And I got into that because I had a leadership development background, right? Youth development background, which was in a lot of, I call it programming, right? Which was about professional development, right? Which was essentially what I had been doing for the years prior to joining Broad. And just that skill of developing people became like the anchor to my work at Broad. And so the first year I was there, the first 2 years, we worked on a framework for like competencies for what adults need to show up to lead inside school systems. And I brought all my like Stanford friends and those folks to bear on the question of like, what are the skills and competencies that adults need to have to lead in school systems? And then we built the Broad framework, right? We call it the Dimensions of Leadership, I think is what we called it. But it had a whole navigation component, right? So it really like strongly influenced my youth development work, really strongly influenced that competency development in that framework. And then, you know, now there are hundreds or maybe thousands of former Broad folks out in the world doing good stuff in schools, not because of like the work that we did only, right? They showed up with their own sets of skills and, you know, massive finance skill sets and MBA skill sets and all these things that are really important for orgs to function. But they also learned how to like navigate relationships and how to build relationships with their colleagues, because schools folks traditionally are like very, you know, feelers, right? They're like very emotionally connected to the work. They care a lot about kids. They really want things to be successful. There's a lot of like challenges that come into school systems. And so like the Broad leadership framework essentially allowed for this like hard skills to plug into like a very, I call it emotionally connected environment, right? And I think that was like a unique moment in my life to like bring that skill to bear. I feel really proud about it. I can't say I did it alone, obviously, right? Like there was a whole team. We spent tons of money, right? Tons of money developing all this work. It wasn't like it just like came out of my head alone, but it was a lot of effort and energy to develop it. And I'm super proud of, I still see lots of folks that are doing great work. Some of them are our clients, right? And they do amazing stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, I'm proud of that. It's been fun. And they're friends for life, a lot of them, that's for sure. So it's been great.
Yeah. And then Mike, you made this transition from Bro to starting Stronger Consulting. So, I mean, I know I've heard the Stronger Consulting origin story, but Mike, for the sake of our audience, what's the Stronger Consulting origin story from Broad?
Yeah, that's a good one. It has a couple of components. One is Mr. Broad, you know, who's a very generous man, but also kind of like an older school guy, right? He grew up in like corporate America and like Hudbury was very successful, obviously, but his version of managing an organization was like people in chairs every day of the week type of things. So you went to an office, and I think, and I always resisted living in Los Angeles because Los Angeles is, for those people who live there or have been there, like know that it's crazy zone in terms of driving and lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So we that never lived in Los Angeles. Yeah, that's the thing. Everybody knows the 405 and like you snail pace. Unless you go, you know, if you go before 7 and after 7, you're okay, right? But that's not when people go to work usually. And so Broad eventually, I after like 8 or 9 years there, it became untenable, right, to continue to commute to Los Angeles. And so we chose lifestyle, my husband and I. And as part of that choice, we were living in San Diego, which is a magical spot on the planet, but also like not a bastion for educational performance or educational equity. And so I decided to start stronger. It was in the summer of 2016. It was the Olympic Games. I think I told somebody this recently, and this back to my Colorado Springs Olympic Training Center experience, right? Like the Olympics have always been a part of my consciousness, right? In some way.
Yeah.
The Olympic Games were happening, and like part of their motto is like the stronger, faster, higher achievement work as athletes. And so that's where I came up with the name. I thought it was a little bold at the time. It took a little while for it to get comfortable because it's like a kind of, I don't know, in some ways there was a little bit of ego about being strong enough to be in the space and bring something of value, right? But it didn't feel well. I think I had imposter syndrome for a while, right? About the name, how we showed up, the work that I was doing, the work that we were bringing, the people we were bringing. Once it started to fit, right, though, it got better and easier, right? And so I think it's sort of like a little bit of like, if you believe it, it will come or something like that. I think there's a phrase out there somewhere similar to that. So that's the origin. Mm. And now it's been a while, right? It's been almost eight years, right? So it's been a journey for sure.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about stronger from those humble origins, in-person office in San Diego to where it is now, there's not a lot of folks who look like us, Mike, as we talked about before you hired me, right? Around being able to do this work, right? And so what have you learned around doing this work in the space that we work in, particularly K-12 ed, with your identity in mind? How has that shaped your entrepreneurial journey of Stronger Consulting?
Yeah, it's a super fun question. The journey has been, it's ongoing, right? It is, I showed up in a certain way. I had this experience with the Pahara Networks, which I've, you know, shared before in some ways, but like I found my people there because they put together their next generation cohorts in 2013, 2014. So I was one of the first cohort members there. Nice. And so like I found my crew. Oh my gosh. And like, my lights went on. I'm like, oh crap, here's my first professional crew that really gets it. Because again, at Broad, well, there were like some people of color, but there were no people of color in leadership except for Mr. Booker, Taco Booker, who's a gem friend, et cetera. And people will know him out there. But like, there was not many of us, right? And I'm kind of like a blender, right? I'm a chameleon, right? I can kind of sit on two sides of this conversation, right? I have a pretty light-skinned Latin kid, right? My Spanish is terrible because, you know, my parents were like, assimilate, right? We were the assimilation generation, right? Like you have to break the ties with the past in order to be who you are and be successful in America. And that like really came out during that Bahar experience, right? They're like, oh, really? There's a lot of pain in there. There was a lot of pain from that experience because there were so few people championing anything, you know, where like you can be successful and own your identity, right? And have a personality that can show up in your work, right? You didn't have to be whitewashed, quote unquote, right? And scrubbed. I have the degrees. I went to, you know, great schools and have the pedigree, right? Which I had to earn, you know? I'm sure I got a leg up sometimes because I had a last name, right? In that regard. And I had first generation stuff in my cards. But, you know, we were basically a poor family. And my dad was a barber. You know, I have kind of a haircut today. It looks okay. I have a new barber, but
yeah.
My dad was a barber and we did not have a lot, right, as a family. We had to work hard. So I had to like get really comfortable with that being, you know, like okay with my identity and like bringing that to the work. And so as a founder, the journey has been like, wow, running the gambit of like people not believing me as a person of color because I don't look that way on our website. Mm. So being a part of but not a part of, right? If I go to Edlock, it's interesting. I'm like the palest guy in the room, not always, but pretty close.
Yeah.
Especially when I joined Edlock in like 2016, 18, whenever it was, 2018 roughly.
Yeah.
I think I and Sharonda Bossier will remember this conversation. I basically had to harass my, you know, Black friends to nominate me to become an Edlock member because they didn't see me as a person of color, some of them, right? And it became a interesting conversation with Sharonda and Lila at the time, right, to join that group. And, you know, once we got into it, it became really obvious, right, that like all of our values were strongly aligned. So that makes me feel amazing. And so I think like these affinity groups that have started to evolve, right, have become more and more powerful. So I found that like Stronger's job, right, is to like bring those voices to the work. And, you know, now I'm in a position where I'm like, I'm fairly protected, right, from people judging me, right? And I'm like, you know, people probably still judge me and that's okay, whatever. But now I don't have to be, I call it like beholden to that, right? I don't have an MBA. I didn't go to Harvard, but I have a master's degree from Chicago, and that's good enough, right? You know, from my perspective. So that's good enough. And like, that's pretty darn good for one generation of life, right, in our family. And I think that makes me proud. And it's helped me to like talk to candidates about their values as humans, right? That they value, they matter in spite of the stuff that they came from, right? Or because of the stuff that they've come from, right? They matter more. As opposed to like the general, I think the words that are out in our society are like, hey, you don't matter as much sometimes because you're not degreed in a certain way. You're not fancy, right, in that regard. And yeah. So I see it as my job to like make space for people as much as I can. That's what I've been doing. So I'm trying hard. I'm not successful all the time, but I'm trying, you know.
I just appreciate the vulnerability there, Mike, because I think you and I have a lot of things in common, right? So I'm seeing some things growing up Roman Catholic, which... Surprise, surprise, Filipino, Roman Catholic. I haven't heard that before, right? And there's been a healing process of my own of understanding Catholicism, but I don't practice it anymore, which in of itself is another story. But I'm not the guest here, so this is not about interviewing Ron Rapitello about that, right? But I think the second thing, right, the assimilationist portion of what you talked about, right? And so I still feel like I'm trying to figure out, wait, my parents didn't really speak Tagalog to me, which was the dialect we spoke. And in the Philippines, there are tons of other dialects, but it's one of the more main dialects because it's the aristocratic language of the capital city, Manila, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I still feel some kind of way that I don't speak fluent Tagalog. I understand it well enough. And I think in the Philippine community, right, it can be a point of tension, just like it is being Latinx, right? I know many friends who speak Spanish, but a number who either don't well or don't at all, and how much that tension exists. Are you authentic enough, right? Yeah. And so I'm curious for you, like today, let's fast forward, right, from starting short to today, like, what is it about your identity that you are re-embracing or like learning right now, right? As you are healing, just like I am, from these assimilationist things that like our parents taught us, I would argue, for survival from their perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I think they, I don't think my parents in particular, like, did not try to hurt us by doing the things that they did, right? They were helping us try to be successful in the world, navigate it as they saw it, right? You know, the things I've leaned into, right, are, you know, trying to bring voice, right, to populations that are, like, often marginalized, right? That's a very common, right, thing that I do in my work, right? But I, like, I'm really comfortable defending, like, the opportunities for brown kids, which is kind of like how I see myself, right? Is like, you know, they need champions all the time because there's all the resistance that is still out there. So I try to do that, right, in my personal life, right? I still feel like I'm constantly defending back to, like, I can pass as the kind of white kid. And so I'm like, wait, you just said the most obnoxious racist thing about, you know, here in, I currently live in Boise, Idaho, which is a funny story in a long, circuitous one, but like, it is the whitest place on earth almost, right? And it's full of folks. And then there's the folks, and the same folks that came into New Mexico through my family and California with my, you know, extended family, like, they were all migrants and migrant labor. And there's a lot of migrant labor in Idaho, right? And like, that part to me is like, oh, those are my roots. Cause if you look at my extended family, like, they're browner, right? And they all were like farmers, basically, right? Or some version of that, right? So that's, so I'm leaning into, I'm like, I think that's powerful, right? You know, and I think that's the thing that makes me feel like, oh, like when I hear people kind of ostracize, right? The help, right? The people that do the work, right? For our country and our cities, right? Like, we put them aside in so many ways. And I like, makes me crazy, you know, when I talk to people who have money and power, I'm like trying to represent that voice more. Right. Or I try to bring that positioning. Usually when I like tell them my story about where I'm from, et cetera, like there's like this whole like, oh, we're sorry, we offended you for the last hour or something. Because
they might have assumed that you were white, right?
Totally.
Let's be right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's obviously like culturally, like there's parts of me that have, you know, assimilated clearly. Right. But, you know, I have fancy pants and fancy shoes. I wear Bamba socks or whatever.
I love Bamba socks.
Who doesn't wear Bamba socks?
Who doesn't wear
Bamba? They're like $40 a pair, right? So whatever. So little things matter, like little things like socks. But yeah, so like, there's like cultural things that I've clearly just accepted, right? But At the same time, I'm still like the question of like how do you, you know, bring that to your life and your work? I mean, you know, I'm still like out there basically defending the little guy, right? Whether that's the laborer, the person, the people that clean my house, right? I won't name them, but like, you know, they come and they get ridiculous amounts of money, very good money for what they do, right? And I'm really happy that I can like be that person for them, right? On a consistent basis, because that is helpful to them, right? And when they go back to see their family in Mexico every Christmas or every couple times a year, right? Like we're usually giving them extra money so that they can, you know, do the hardest thing, which is be away from their family, which is really hard. So those are things that like, you know, little tiny things that we do. And then like, we try to employ people here stronger, right? That are, don't all look like the typical education consultants, right? Again, I'm not perfect at this. And like, there's obviously other things besides race and skin color that matter in the work that we do, but it's like an important feature of what we're looking for in our staff and our clients who want to appreciate that, right? Will come to us, I hope, right? And if they don't, that's okay too, right? There's obviously lots of great people doing work in the space. That's great. I'm happy to be a part of that, you know, that spectrum, because I think a lot of us are committed to the same goals. But I think our version of it, right, is like, oh, hey, we can like do it a little bit better, a little bit different because of our own stories, right? And that makes us special.
Yeah. So I'm in a shameless plug here because we're both at Stronger Consulting, right? So I'm curious, Mike, what would you tell the audience around Stronger Consulting's approach that's unique? Like, what about us? What's the special sauce?
Yeah. Good. I mean, most, it has to do with the people, frankly. We have some magical systems. We have some bad out of the back. The people, us, you, me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the other team members, there's some special sauce in the people, and it's fun to have our culture together, right? People that are like, kind of like, I call it about, we rowing together in the same boat, moving at a rhythm together, like that works somehow because we trust each other. But it makes it easier to like service clients because we have a values that say, okay, clients matter, and we're going to tell them the truth, right? When we see it a certain way. And that way has some intonation of race and equity in it, right? So people that don't want to hear that may not choose to work with us, but I think it makes us more powerful and better with clients who care about that work. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. I mean, I know we have some magic in it. Some of this comes from my broad work, right? It's like we spent, again, graciously, we had a philanthropist, right, that was spending money for us to develop incredible tools and systems, right? And like that knowledge came with me, right,
yes,
to Stronger. And so like we've been able to convert that knowledge into some of the work that we do with our clients, especially on the search work, right? Which, you know, is very useful to assessment of candidates, right? That's super powerful stuff because I think like we call ourselves pro people of color. We try to bring more candidates to the table during our recruitment process that look like the kids that our clients are serving. And we're also like strictly anti-bias, right, in our work in terms of assessment, right? Like we just kind of like discard all that stuff. We have a bunch of systems in place that like make it more possible for people to kind of check their biases. It's not perfect, right? Like humans are humans, right? But it's really solid stuff, honestly. And when I look at like some of the things that like happens in corporate America and how people hire, like I'm like, oh my gosh, how are we still doing this stuff from what I feel like is the 1980s version of choosing your friends to be your employees? That kind of stuff is not part of our culture. So if you're looking for that regular kind of like old boys network, that's not here. So maybe,
amen,
that's, again, that may be dangerous, but it's super fun that we get to be leaders in that space like that. So that's great. And then, you know, we have competition. There's other good people out there doing this work too, who have great stuff too, but like, you know, we do our stuff proudly. So that's exciting.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. Well, we're rounding out our time. So I'm going to ask you the bookend question of the Ronderings podcast is, what's Mike's Rondering? What's the lesson or value you'd like to share today?
Yeah, that's interesting. It is a Rondering, right? Or maybe the wondering, right? It's like, I've been in the work almost 30 years now, right? The work of education reform and improvement, right, for children and opportunities. Opportunity gap, the achievement gap has been around. We've been trying to achieve and close the gap for my whole life, right? And I think in some ways we've kind of figured out the systematic way of achieving that, closing the gap for kids that would typically not make it through. But I think there's been some cost there, right? And so my current like wondering is around like, hey, like what have we been doing to children while we've been trying to provide them with opportunity have we been like also like shaving off their well-being, right? And their health as humans, right? Back to my youth development framework, right? Like, I'm like, oh, have we been like kind of skimming away a little bit at their humanity and taking away some of the joy that comes up with being a child, right? In order to achieve. And I think America has become increasingly competitive, right? It's like been so tough, right? For kids to be successful. And we just keep piling more stuff on them, you know? And I wonder whether they're going to be okay. And so as we, as I mature, right? As the company matures, as the work that we do matures, like we're spending more time and energy working with clients and in context around like children's wellness, right? Like it's no, there's no joke about like, that mental health is a catastrophe, right, for kids for all sorts of reasons. But some of it, I think this is because, and we hear this from children because we've done a lot of surveying and conversations with them. It's that like the pressure is intense and the fear of the climate is intense and the political environment sucks and the economy is rough. And, you know, all those things are really impending, like pounding on them, right? And then we're also sending them to school and school's like, you're not good enough. Do more work. Achieve more. And I'm like, wait, slow down. Like, I mean, part of this is like, you don't need to be an A+ student, right? To be a happy human, right? You can be a happy human and have a strong, rich life and like love your family and contribute to society without achieving, you know, at this place of pressure that some kids are feeling the pressure to be at, right? And I think that's my wondering, right? Like, that's what I've been thinking about a lot in the last year, 2 years, right? And like, our work has been shifting with that in mind. I think that's my challenge. I'm sure it's controversial to say like, hey, don't take your foot off the gas on equity and opportunity, right, for kids. But at the same time, we had to balance like what's also good for them, which is like to play and to be with others and peers and adults that care about them and have loving relationships that they can navigate. When I was in middle school and high school, the worst stuff was because my emotional center was a disaster. And I was getting straight A's in schools, but I was an emotional disaster, right? And I'm guessing I'm not the only kid. I know I'm not the only kid that was like that, right? And I'm sure
that what was happening a good deal in my high school. I mean,
everywhere. Tough, right?
Yeah.
And maybe it's just the brown kids that noticed it, right? Or maybe the kids that were just marginalized or whatever that is. But I think every kid, I think it's true. Like every child struggles growing up, period, right? With some version of something. And there's not a purpose, there's not a reason that we have to keep all those trappings in place in order to like make perfect children. They'd be better if we just kind of like took it a little bit easier, took it a little slower, gave kids a little more space, gave them a little more love, you know, not protected them from everything, but also gave them like chances to grow in safe spaces and to learn, right? And I think that's what we sometimes we get away from that because we're like testing them a lot. And then we're like saying like, hey, if you don't get through calculus by the time you get out of AP high school math, you're not good enough, right? And I think that pressure, maybe, again, trimming away at people's humanity, right? And that's what's stressful for me to think about that. So that's not a super cheery note, but it's kind of where my head is right now. That's for sure.
Now, I'm glad that you're embracing that because, I mean, I think it's parallels to the conversation that I've seen shift in this space. When you talk about competencies and leadership in K-12, the thing that's been elevated, at least I look at two frameworks, I'm going to shout them out because they're good people. Our friends at MCEL, right, interviewed predominantly male leaders of color in the K-12 space to create a competency framework, which includes wellness, right? Mary Rice Booth, who's a previous guest of Rondering's, dear friend of the Leadership Academy, worked with her new leaders in getting leaders of color to thrive. One of the competencies she has is around wellness. So this is a conversation that's starting to more pervade the K-12 ed space. I wish that lived, frankly, more in our leadership rubrics as we assess people. And this is not just us. This is because I think we are doing an absolute disservice. Soapbox Ron Rapitalo here of not being able to assess it because if we're not assessing it for the individual and frankly assessing it for the system, the culture of the organization, I don't care how hard you work in all these things. We do not create sustainability and ultimately the effects, accountability, results, and all these other things, which are what people have often cared about, but you need the foundation of the love and the wellness and people's well-being and their identities being included and celebrated, right? Those things are like, I hate the word soft skills. I'm like, there's nothing soft about that stuff.
It's like, I call it core fundamental. It's like the blood vessels in your skin, right? You need them. Like, they must be there. Otherwise, you're not there, right? My reference on that, Ron, is like, you know, if you have a, I have a husband, right? And, you know, if we have a bad moment, like, mm-hmm. my day can be kind of crummy, right? If we have a bad moment in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and it takes a while for that to wear off. And that's what, you know, we've been together 20 years right now, right? So it's been a little bit, we've been practicing Beautiful. This practice of like loving each other and struggling sometimes, right? But, you know, that's a pretty safe space, but it still makes me raw, right? When like it doesn't feel well, when we're not emotionally kind of like in a good spot. And, you know, imagine, you know, that's how children are a lot, right? Yeah. They need that a lot. And I think especially kids who come from like broken families or one parent families or whatever, like they are not getting that enough. And I think it's really showing up. It shows up for them in school. They don't study well. They don't sleep. They don't eat, all that stuff, right? And then we're wondering why aren't they doing well? Well, no kidding, right? It's obvious the why, right? Yeah. So anyways, that's the struggle right now. That's our newest struggle, I think. There's a whole generation of people, two or three behind me now, right, that are coming up with like much more high empathies on this stuff. And thank goodness, because we need more of that in this space, I think, right? So,
Well, Mike, before we end our time together, how do people find you? How do people find Stronger Consulting? What are the things you want to plug?
So easy, strongerconsulting.com. Pretty easy. We should rank on Google with all that, you know, energy to Google rank or whatever. You know, they still run the world, those guys, those brilliant people in California, wherever they are. And, you know, LinkedIn, Mike Montoya, LinkedIn is pretty easy to find me. That's the easiest stuff. It's Mike is Stronger Consulting. That's super easy. Like, it's just my name, right? So send me a note. I'd be giving my cell phone, but that's all over the place. So you can find my cell phone. If you just Google me and my cell phone, it'll show up, I bet. So I'd love to talk to you. Also reach out to Ron. He knows how to find me. Don't forget.
Your friendly neighborhood guest. Speaking of, thank you, Mike. It was a pleasure. I always learn so much when I have guests like you that I've known for a minute. I always learn something new. So that's part of the joy of like having this podcast. I get to go a little bit deeper with people I love and respect. So thank you for your time. And Ron, during Spam, in the words of one of my favorite people, Deion Sanders, we come in. We come with more incredible people like Mike. Peace. Thank you, Mike, for sharing more of yourself in this conversation with me on Ronderings. And I love what you talked about the end, this idea that we are focused on our children. How do we balance achievement and well-being so that we can better support our kids' overall development and happiness? And it was also very, very heartwarming to talk about just how much we align around bringing marginalized voices to the forefront as an essential part for creating a more equitable society. Mike, thank you for your wisdom. Mike, thank you for the work that you and I and a number of others are doing, Stronger Consulting, to do search and consulting services in the broader youth space. Check us out on Ronderings. We keep coming with the amazing guests. Peace.